is GKW. Welcome to another edition of Good Karma Wrestling. I'm Gabe Neitzer from ESPN Milwaukee, along with Brian Rowitz from ESPN West Palm. Jonathan Hood off today, although he was a part of where we start today, because there is a big name in wrestling free agency at this point, because he's still out there. Some dates have been announced, but the wrestler formerly known as Karrion Kross, now once again going by Killer Kross on the independent scene. He also has a book that was just released. It is a top seller over on Amazon.com. Here is our interview with Killer Kross. Excited to bring on our next guest here on GKW. Not only can you check out his Amazon best-selling book, Life is Fighting, over on Amazon.com. You can also check out his social media pages for all the different places he is going to be. He is Killer Kross. What's going on, man?
Well, the black helicopters are circling the house. I'm not in prison yet. Everything is good, guys. Everything is good.
That's good.
So, how long did the process of putting together and then writing a book take?
Well, I started the book at the time that I was released last time. Not this time, the other time. And I basically finished it right before we came back, which may happen again. Who knows how things play out? But it was a few months. It was a few months. It was a scary few months, actually. I went back and forth on whether anyone was ever going to read this book or not. I got a little intimidated by the amount of things that were in the book that I just wasn't sure people were going to, I wanted people to read about. But I'm glad I did it in the end.
Kross, you've done a lot of these interviews, and we watched him, and we're watching your YouTube. We got to promote that as well. Your YouTube is just off the chain. I mean, we've seen you say you appreciate the fans, you appreciate us supporting you. But what does that mean deep down? When the cameras are off, when you're talking to Scarlett about it, how does that really make you feel here?
Well, I mean, look, the reality of it is the perception of equity in the eyes of the audience when they look at a performer largely has to do with the way that they're booked. Like, people typically in mass droves don't necessarily like to cheer for the guy who's always losing, especially if it's a bad guy. There's something endearing about a good guy who always loses because he could be painted as the underdog. But I think something happened where people organically began to look at me as the underdog because they could see I had something more to offer than what they were watching. And then I was able to kind of punch through. They were able to see that. So people being with me and the support that I'm getting on a daily basis in all directions, it feels really good, man. Like, I feel like it's superseded that equation of how you're booked versus the perception of equity. The way I was booked, it didn't affect negatively how people feel about me. And that's powerful. I don't even know what to say to that. I can't remember a time where that's happened necessarily, because again, I was the bad guy. But that's not always really the way people saw it. And people who did maybe see me as a bad guy, they felt like, you know what, this is our bad guy. That's pretty cool, man. Like, we can't force that to happen. They either choose you or you don't. That's never, not like that. That's never really quite happened to me like this before.
So off of that, have you been able to self-analyze and just look back and say, why did that happen? Because you look 6 months ago, a year ago, you have a faction, you're on TV. You're still on TV a few months ago. What changed in the fans' eyes in your opinion?
You know, it's hard for me to frame it that way. It almost kind of feels unfair for me to say this is how it happened. I feel like it almost has to come from the audience, that explanation. But in my opinion, I think certain things that contributed to that was, for the little amount of time that I got, I tried to be as entertaining as I possibly could. And that started to come through the TV. When I didn't have time on TV, rather than complaining about it or being moody about it, I went online and I tried to develop something that was entertaining in the absence of me being on TV. And I think my efforts began to be noticed on more than just a scale of whether or not this is entertaining or not. People could see that there was a performer there who was dying to reach out and connect. And I think sometimes that's what you have to do in wrestling. You have to, in a tasteful way, get ahead of where maybe they're taking you, or show them, hey, we can go farther than this and it can be in your benefit as well. I can really give these people something they're going to remember. And finding a balance act to that is different for everybody.
And I got to imagine, you mentioned, you know, how scary it was kind of writing the book of, okay, are people going to connect with this? Putting that stuff out there, are people going to connect with this? I'm assuming is just almost equally as scary, is it not?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I was mentioning, I was talking to a friend of mine about this. A lot of people like to feel like they are in a room full of like-minded people all the time. And that can be scary for a person who maybe doesn't feel like they're like everybody else. And ironically, I think that is like everybody in general. Like we're all different. We're all individuals. We all have different thoughts and emotions. And finding a common ground between people, no matter where you're from, no matter what you believe in, I think that common ground is vulnerability. And a lot of people are afraid to cross that bridge because it's not your home run story to talk about your failures and your shortcomings. Like on first impressions, if you go to a job interview, you're not going to tell the employer how many jobs you quit or got fired from or walked out of. But ironically, everyone has quit a job or has been fired. And once you cross, you know, those boundaries of having that conversation, you're like, oh, whether this person is more successful than me or not, we actually do have a lot in common. I think there's something there. There's something special there.
So, you know, when you're at WrestleMania and you break out and you lash out, it's your feelings. You're coming from the gut and saying, hey, this has been my story. I wonder, is there any other WWE superstars that can learn from your experience? We've talked about Natalya before, right? Natalya wants to be Natty. Natty is just unbelievable in Bloodsport and NWA and all these other places, and she wants to come out. I wonder, what could she learn from your story?
We talk a lot. She is absolutely killing it. I love the fact that she's able to step outside of the television bubble and do things with third-party companies, because people can get to see that she has a wide range, an array of different things that she can do, right? And I think it's a good thing when you're able to do that. Sometimes you're not afforded the ability to do that stuff in the television format that we're committed to being on in terms of being on contract. But if you can go somewhere else and you can try that, it gives the audience and everybody watching an opportunity to say, oh, maybe we should incorporate that. People seem to like that more, or, you know.
We talk a lot on this show, matches versus moments and stories and things like that. You might be the perfect example of that. You talk about being booked. There's not a lot of wins in terms of matches, but the stories are there. How do you rank those two things when you're telling your story?
Well, I have to look at the independents versus commercialized wrestling. So in order to answer your question, you'll get a lot of independent shows that will only run matches.
Right.
How many people are they drawing?
Yeah, a few versus, hundred.
Right. Versus commercialized wrestling, where it's very story-based. You look at how much they're drawing. Now, an argument, you know, could be made that they have a huge marketing machine and they have a greater reach. But if the wrestling itself was absolutely number one, then there'd be no reason for the stories, right?
Sure.
So I would probably put the stories before the actual activity in the matches. And AJ and I used to talk about that all the time. AJ, I think he's even publicly said he feels that the stories are essential to wrestling for sure.
You have wrestled all over the world in a number of different places. What is the one thing, the kind of through line that all these places you've wrestled that you've, yes, this is why I love wrestling?
Audience engagement. Audience engagement, 1,000%. You could run through a wall in that ring and get up and do it again. On a Wednesday, when you have no audience, you run through a wall, you're going to the hospital. You're not doing it again. So it's having the live audience there reacting with the ride that you're taking them on. You know, you get power bombed off the top rope. It doesn't feel great. But when you're laying there and you're listening for that reaction, you're like, yeah, okay, let's keep going. So the crowd is essential. Most important part.
Cross, you talked about being vulnerable. And I just think that we can all relate to this story of, because we're all in entertainment in different ways. We're a branch in the tree of entertainment doing this show. I just wonder about just, you know, in the sports, like, and sports entertainment atmosphere, what that's like to be vulnerable, knowing that, hey, man, I'm just trying to do my job, but there's always someone trying to stab you in the front or the back or the side. What's that mind fuck like for you on a day-to-day basis in this business?
not great. It's not great, bro. The way I have to look at it, that is going to exist in any sort of high competitive occupation. So let's say somebody's at odds with that sort of culture in their working environment. What are you going to do? Quit? Okay, well, you go somewhere else, you get some other sort of occupation. That's still going to be there at some point. The reality of it to me is if you're good at what you do, and perhaps you're better at it than some people that you work around, there's always going to be different personalities that are going to try to cut your legs out from underneath you so they can try to get ahead, because there's no other way they can. So I always tell people to stick it out and find a way to make it work, because that will, if you're good at something, that will follow you everywhere you go, no matter what.
Because life is fighting, Brian. Because
right. Life is fighting. Oh, look at that. That's a promotional guy right there.
He knows.
For you, obviously, these last 6 months, you couldn't have predicted this far. 6 months from now, where do we see Killer Cross?
Man, this is going to be very strange to say, but I feel very good about everything going on right now. I know that may sound really crazy, because like there's the perception of what people see online, and everyone does their takes and their interviews and their assessment and analysis on everything. I have never felt this supported in my entire life. I can't even tell you how many people have reached out in all directions, in all walks of life, celebrities, musicians, producers, I never knew that this many people were watching what I was doing. I can't believe it. And it's a strange thing. Like sometimes people only ever get their flowers in life when they pass away. And that's always really sad. I talked to Chris Bey about that. Chris Bey never knew how much people cared about him until he broke his neck. And he said it was a very weird feeling because people are confessing their love for him. He didn't know that they felt that way. And I feel like in a very strange way, I'm getting all of that right now. So whereas I had the audiences cheering for Cross, now I have people reaching out and being like, hey, Kevin, I love you. And that hits different. That hits really different. And whatever is coming over the next 6 months, I feel like it's going to be a good thing. I'm trusting my gut on this. I am exactly where I need to be in my life. This is going to prepare me for who I need to become. And writing that book was, I had a catharsis in writing it. I realized, man, if I had to go back and tell my younger self anything, maybe I'd just say, like, keep going. Because all of the silly things that happened to me and even the mistakes I made actually led me to here. So I don't know if I want to mess with that.
You talk about the support, and obviously you get the advantage of having your wife along with you on this wild ride that is professional wrestling. What is that like to be able to have her kind of experiencing a lot of the same things you do?
I would, these experiences that I've had, these memories that I've had, would be worthless if I had them by myself. I feel like being able to, it's like when you go to the movies, I'm not opposed to going to the movies by myself to watch a good film, but it's a lot better when you go with a friend, because then you could talk about it afterwards. You could say, remember this, remember that. You go to an amusement park. If you went on the rides by yourself, like a psychopath, Michael Myers style, you know what I mean? It just feels weird. You go with your family or your friends or something. That's what being on the road with my wife has felt like for years. As like I'm at a theme park and we're going on every single ride together and we're like, that was incredible. And we're going to remember that for the rest of our lives. And her and I coming up from very humble beginnings, sometimes we would just look around and be like, I can't believe this is happening.
Killer Cross with us here on Good Karma Wrestling. Life is Fighting, available now where books are sold. Last time you were on Good Karma Wrestling, you mentioned there were several house shows that stood out that Scarlett was in, that she turned agents' heads. The crowd was into it. So, you know, we haven't been able to see her or have not heard from her. She's not doing the book tour. You are. So what's her future? Because I think we want to see her in the ring, too. Is that something that's on the card for 2025?
I think so. We have dates locked in all the way into spring next year. We just don't want to announce everything at once. I think the hardest part about what has recently happened is having so much work that we can't do all of it, and we really want to. It's stuff that we'd be really interested to do. It's very fun. In terms of her getting back in the ring, I think, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but you could probably anticipate that's definitely going to be happening.
Let's get out the fantasy pencil. Past or present, who could Cross and Scarlett tell the best stories with in pro wrestling?
Oh, man. Well, I think Macho Man and Scary Sherry would have been a good matchup. You know, Miss Elizabeth. Yeah,
you're right. You
know? I think that would have been cool. There's so many, dude. There's so many. That's the first one that came to mind, though. I like to go to the fun route.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Big nostalgia mark.
So Jimmy Garvin and Precious, Dusty Rhodes and Baby Doll. Yeah. Yes. Of course, you're a heel. Of course.
Yes.
So you're yourself. You're yourself in all of this, by the way. You don't have to change. You don't have to be a baby. Like, you're just the heel couple. Both of
them. Yes. Bam Bam and Luna.
Yeah.
Man. Edge and Lita, or Edge and Beth, whatever.
Okay.
Man.
There
okay.
you go.
So you can give me my money now if it's Edge and Lita and you two.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. First of all, I'm getting an excellent match, right?
Right. Yes.
Then I'm getting the cat fight outside and it rolls into the ring. It's going to, like, or like the mixed attack. So four people that can work. Yeah, that's novel. Yeah, we can get that.
Hell yeah.
Again, you can check out the book Life is Fighting wherever books are sold. Again, check it out, Amazon. Kevin, thank you so much for jumping on with us. We appreciate it. Congratulations on the success of the book. And you got three guys here that are certainly going to be keeping an eye on whatever's next.
Thank you so much, man. This has been very cool. I appreciate the time to talk about it. And I keep everybody posted.
Killer Cross, again, always excited to talk with him. Again, second time, he's friend of show now.
Yeah,
he's established, Brian. He's friend of show. I don't know what's next for him. Obviously, he did the interview with Ariel Helwani, saying ultimately he wants to go back to WWE, but that's just not what it is right now. So they're booking out dates.
We spent almost 20 minutes with him yesterday, and I still have no idea what's next for him. Like, he's working dates. He says he has dates all the way through next year, just not announcing it yet. He's an intriguing name, and he's very thoughtful with his responses. It's going to be interesting these next 6 months for him.
All right, so that's where we lead off the show. But a lot of other things to dive into this week, including Forbidden Door coming up this weekend. In AEW, let's dive into the three count, the other top three stories in the world of professional wrestling. What do we have number one this week, Brian?
Let's stick with some free agency news. Came out this weekend, Chris Jericho's AEW contract looks like it's expiring at the end of 2025. Could a WWE return be in his future? Well, he liked an Instagram post referencing that. He shared a post from his WWE days. So we haven't seen Jericho in a while, but where does Chris Jericho finish his wrestling career?
I mean, finishing up in WWE makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
Like, eventually going back, going into the Hall of Fame. And I know he's on the record saying, oh, it's not that important for him to go in the Hall of Fame. It's important for everybody. Like, if you have the opportunity to go into Hall of Fame, if you are an all-time great like Chris Jericho is, going to that Hall of Fame is ultimately going to be important to you. Having that moment at WrestleMania, being able to give the speech, being inducted, get the Hall of Fame ring. And I don't know how long he plans to wrestle. You know, I don't know if it's just a quick stint in WWE, but ultimately I think he ends up back there. And if it's at the end of this contract, it wouldn't be that shocking to me just because I don't know what's there. I don't know what's left for him in AEW. Like, it's the old adage that Jay Hood always talks about, like back in the old days, there's nothing left for him in the territory. So you move on. You know, if he were to leave to go to WWE, I don't think there shouldn't be hard feelings. I think between him and Tony Khan and the Bucks and Kenny Omega and all those guys, but I think it would make a ton of sense for him to go back to WWE because I don't think there's anything left for him to accomplish in AEW. I don't think there are any stories right now for him to tell in AEW. It's unfortunate that the Learning Tree gimmick is the last thing he did right now in AEW because it was by far the worst thing he did in AEW. But he had a long, really good run for that promotion. So I think moving on makes the most sense to me right now.
Yeah, that's why I was even trying to think, like, what else there is to do. Because we talked about it, especially during the Learning Tree, and was the Ocho before that. We kept saying, like, all right, Chris, you got to go away for a little bit. Because Jericho, the king of reinvention, and part of the success of that was he went away a lot. So you began to miss him. Then all of a sudden he shows up as a surprise. It's a big deal. There's nothing in AEW like, oh, I wish I could see this. Like, the matches aren't quite to Jericho's level like they were in the past. If you gave him a title run as a face, like, him and MJF, we've seen stuff like that and some of the other heels out there. The WWE one just seems to make too much sense where we've said on the show, the wrestling doesn't matter as much. He can make a Rumble appearance. It'll be a huge moment. You can do the countdown clock and the Y2J, go through Mania, put someone over at Mania, and ride off into the sunset. And it'll be a moment. It'll be exciting. It'll be great. And I think that's sort of the end of the career of Chris Jericho, which is, like you said, a Hall of Fame worthy one.
Yeah, I guess ultimately it depends upon how much longer he wants to wrestle.
Right.
Like if he wants to wrestle multiple years, I don't know if WWE makes sense. Then I think sticking around AEW makes a little bit more sense, just because there's at this point in the career of Chris Jericho, I don't know what else I want to see. Right. And the thing about him going back to WWE, like all the matches I would probably want to see, like if I could see him and KO again.
Sure.
We don't know the future of KO right now as he's dealing with injury, right? To kind of revisit the pairing that they had. I don't know. The answer, I guess, to this question strictly depends upon how much he wants to do and, I guess, what ideas he has left. I think there's probably more unique matchups for him in AEW at this point because there's not – we've had this discussion, and I'm sure we're going to continue to have discussion. There's not a lot of young talent for him to put over in WWE to begin with.
Touché.
So I don't know. If it's a 2-3 year run with WWE, I don't think I want to see. I don't think that's anything either. If it's a quick, hey, he's got 6 months left, and they can, you know, his contract expires, and it happens the way you planned it out. I think that would be cool, but I don't think a 2-3 year run is great for him in WWE either at this point.
I feel like the only thing that could keep him to AEW is the loyalty, which, you know, he's a rock star. He's not going to have loyalty anywhere. But it could just be him saying, hey, I helped get this place off the ground. He was the face of AEW from day one. And maybe he doesn't want to give Hunter and the WWE that feather in the cap. Say, oh, look, we got Cody. Now we got Jericho also. That could be the only thing I could see that makes him stick in AEW and maybe just do more backstage stuff. Or, hell, put him on commentary. Remember how good he was during the pandemic?
Yeah. Like,
you can find other stuff for him to do besides trying to wrestle 5-star matches.
Well, initially, that seemed a part of his contract, that he was doing Rampage commentary even before the pandemic on Friday nights. Like, that was a part of what he did. I don't know what his relationship with Hunter is. I really don't. It seemed like he had a very high reverence for Vince because if you recall when AEW was like rumored and Jericho was doing things for New Japan, he initially said, well, like Vince is cool with this cause it's on a different continent, but I don't think I'd wrestle for a North American company other than WWE. Well, he shows up at All In and then he's obviously a part of the build for AEW, but he has always had that reverence for Vince. Again, whether that's right or wrong, I'll leave that up to whatever. Yeah. But it always seemed like he had that great relationship with Vince. I don't know what his relationship is with Triple H. And if it's a so-so relationship and he gets the hint that Hunter just wants to use him to be like, oh, we got Cody and the first AEW champ. Like, I could see Jericho going, well, bleep that. I'll just stay here then.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, I feel like the options then are very limited. Like, he's done the New Japan thing. TNA is not an option anymore because of the WWE relationship. Like, this is it. Like, you got two options now. Like, it's a monopoly in terms of that, where Jericho in the indies doesn't make sense. Like, that is way too expensive of a price tag for some of these independent companies. He's got two options. Maybe you got a couple of years left to try and get some things out there, but there'll be a moment. Like, even if it's AEW, it will be a moment the next time we see Chris Jericho on our television.
Oh, without a doubt. So Jericho is, how old is Chris?
40 something?
So he's 54.
Wow. All right.
He's 50. He's going to turn 55 in November.
Yeah, like 2 more years maybe?
Yeah. So I think he's, it's very likely, I would say, whatever contract he signs next is his last wrestling contract.
Right. And that's the thing, like the WWE speed seems to fit him better, what we've seen in the ring. Like, they tried with him and Bandido, but like, do you want to see him in Ospreay or him in Swerve? Like, I don't know, like, if he's got that speed in him anymore.
Well, and that's the thing, you mentioned like giving him a title run as a face, like, unless it's a run with the Unified Championship, that's the only thing. Like, him as AEW champion doesn't make sense to me because there are a lot of other people lining up who would make a lot more sense than him to be AEW champion. So I don't think that would make a ton of sense. And I guess it depends upon what he wants to do post-wrestling. I don't know how much longer he wants to travel with Fozzy. Maybe he wants to travel with Fozzy for 15 more years. I literally have no idea. But if he wants to get into more creative side of things in the pro wrestling side, sticking around AEW might make more sense. The way that, we saw Bryan Danielson on the commentary last night for AEW. Maybe, you know, he kind of follows in those types of footsteps. It all kind of depends upon what he wants to do, how much longer he wants to wrestle.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out. He said the reports right now is end of 26 is when the deal is up. So end of 25, sorry. Yeah, so very easily could be part of a 2026 Royal Rumble.
All right, what do we got at number two this week?
All right, pointed out on social media over the last week or so, The Shield. Now all three members, Roman, Rollins, Mox, are six-time world champions, with Rollins winning his sixth back at SummerSlam. Is The Shield the greatest faction of this century?
Probably, and I think there's only one faction that can rival them.
Okay.
I think. And it's got to be Evolution. Evolution is the only other faction that I think can – and again, Evolution's a little bit different, right? Because it was past, present, future. So you you already had you already had Ric Flair and all the championships that he had, and Hunter, who hadn't gotten to his 14 yet, but had still I have no idea how many, but it was a lot when Evolution was formed, world championships. But even if you take those two away and you just look at Orton and Batista, most factions aren't going to develop two Hall of Fame world champs, right? So that's where, even if you separate, and that's probably why, again, The Shield is ahead of them. So even if you separate the two Hall of Fame careers that were already formed by the time Evolution came around, like Batista and Randy Orton themselves doing what they did is probably the only thing I think this century that can rival what The Shield has done.
Because that's the other thing. Like, you look at the world title reigns of The Shield members, one, maybe two occurred when they were actually The Shield, right?
No, none of the world championships happened when none of them. No, I mean, they had the tag team champs. Ambrose was Mox was the U.S. champ.
Uh-huh.
But they never had a world championship between them while they were The Shield. That all happened post-Shield, after they broke up. And then you start thinking about the sheer amount, because Mox had a really long reign.
Right.
A couple of different times as AEW champ, what Roman did. So, the length of reigns as well.
Mox also, the New Japan title counts in that. Like, he was a strong champion. So, the only one I would say maybe you make a case for, because of the impact on the business, and it's still Roman related, is the Bloodline. Like, you talk about Hall of Fame career. So, all three Shield members go on to become Hall of Famers. Mm-hmm. Roman, Bloodline, you could make a case, has two Hall of Fame careers. Paul Heyman Hall of Fame career, the Usos Hall of Fame career.
As a tag team. Yeah. As they're one of the most decorated tag teams of all time.
And then Sammy?
I mean, Sammy's a Hall of Famer.
So
at this point,
I don't know if you get the resume in terms of sheer number of world titles and things like that, but you're getting.
Well, you don't, because you only have one other world title.
Yeah, that's fair.
You only have Jay. Right, got Jay. You've got a lot of other championships, obviously, and the Usos had the long run with the tag team championships while they were a part of the Bloodline, even previous to that. But I don't even think that can rival, because again, then you've got Solo in there, and and I don't think Solo is going to be a world champ anytime soon.
So what about projecting ahead? And I was trying to think of someone like Don Callis family in AEW. Could that possibly be a faction that you look back on and you're like, wow, they had all these guys together? Takeshita could be a future world champion. Our buddy Fletcher could be a future world champion. Okada technically part of that right now. Josh Alexander, we've seen him reach some peaks. I don't know there. Could that be one?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about stuff in AEW, I mean, the Elite literally formed a wrestling company.
That's a good one.
I guess you would have to throw the Elite. And again, I know that started as part of, but it's still this century. Yeah. It started in New Japan, obviously, because they were, Bullet Club Elite. But I mean, the Elite would have to be in this short list of conversation, because if you start your own wrestling promotion, and then create a world championship to give away to John Moxley. I feel like that's despite the lack of like AEW world championships. I know obviously Kenny Omega had his, but I mean, creating your own company is pretty high up there in terms of list of accomplishments. Because as good as the Shield were, it's not all Shield wrestling.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, you go adjacent elite, like Cody sort of counts in there, Hangman counts under the umbrella of starting a revolution. That's a good one.
Yeah. So I get, as we talked it, I didn't even think about it until you started mentioning it. I'm like, oh, wait. We got to mention the elite within this conversation because, well, they had the first 10,000.
Yeah.
10,000 10,000 tickets sold for a wrestling show outside of WWE and all those things that started and launched to get to where we are right now for the world of professional wrestling. So I would have to put the Elite on that list.
That's a good one.
If we're putting together a top five.
Like, I feel like the Shield had a big impact in the moment, but I don't know if you could have cast out this. Like, the fact that all future world champions, faces of companies, like, it's quite a glow up from those three.
Well, no. And again, like I in the moment, that's when I really became an Ambrose fan, like in the moment, like he was the voice of, I mean, he was the one who would always start off the promos. Like Roman was the silent badass. And it seemed like Ambrose was more or less the leader of that. And then when they broke up, you know, they fell out. WWE fell out of love with Ambrose for whatever reason. He did eventually become a world champion in a pretty unique night where all three members of the Shield held the WWE championship, which is, again, just another little twist and a nice little cherry on top of what that faction was. But I don't think you could have forecasted what they all became.
Right.
Because they wanted to force Roman down our throats.
Mm-hmm.
We rejected it.
Yep.
And then Roman finally became what they wanted him to, and the fans accepted him. Seth has always been there and been the solid guy, and Ambrose had to become Mox again and go do his own thing to kind of become – again, all three of them at different points have been the wrestler of the year. Like PWI, when they do their top 100, they have all at one point been number one on that list, which is, I think, also another – incredible thing that we may never see again from a faction where all of them just mean this much to the business.
Yeah,
it's funny because we always talk about there has to be a Marty Jannetty and there has to be a Shawn Michaels, and somehow this group of three, they're all Shawn Michaels. It doesn't make any sense.
They're all legit faces of the company. Like the amount of times we've talked about AEW, like Mox refusing to go on vacation and being that Band-Aid and dealing with the Punk stuff. Like Mox is one of the reasons AEW is what it is today. And Rollins has been there. Roman's done his thing. Like, that's very impressive for three guys. Like, oh, yeah, like, we're all A+. Like, that's not easy to pull off.
Do we ever see a Shield reunion again?
See, it's funny. We talk about Jericho going back to WWE and how it makes sense. Mox seems to be the type of guy that just doesn't give a shit about anyone else. That, like, he just never goes back there. Like, he doesn't want to deal with that drama. And then Roman and Rollins are the opposite. They're so WWE loyal. I don't think we ever see them outside of that umbrella. So long answer, but no, I don't think we ever see the three of them together again.
Yeah, I mean, I would love for them outside of WWE to do something, you know, as – I mean, I guess Roman never really had an independent career because he's always been a WWE guy. Uh-huh. But, you know, if you get Tyler Black and Dean Ambrose, Moxley and –
like those get them together lifers. Somewhere. Roman and Rollins are WWE lifers now.
Oh, they're lifers at this point. Yeah, I can't imagine. Like Triple H would be foolish. If one of those two got out of the company, like that would be foolish if he pissed them off to the point where they left.
So that's the big hiccup there. Because like it's weird. I wouldn't even call Mox an AEW lifer. I think it's more of just a non-WWE guy. Like he handles his exit gracefully, mainly because Renee was still working there. But he's just the type to like, no, I'm done. And like, we just never see him again. He's out living in the desert somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But I also could see him getting convinced to go back, too. Because, I mean, we do hear every once in a while in interviews, we hear, I mean, it's never from Mox. Like, you never hear Mox talk about, like, Roman or Seth. But every once in a while, when a Shield question is asked of the other two guys, like, they'll bring him up,
right?
And how much they love him and how important he is. So, obviously, the relationship still exists. But because he's Mox, like he's a wild card. Like I can only imagine what would ever happen if he showed back up.
God. Hell, we almost got it like at Mania, where everyone thought all of a sudden he was coming out there. When the Shield music hit, like it got that reaction where it's like, they got Mox back? Like, how did they pull that off? Like, that was the reaction. You got it in Philadelphia. It just, there was no chance that was happening.
Yeah. And again, it's Mox, so you just never know. But that, and again, I can't imagine, like, I think of other factions that had such an impact. And obviously, like, the Wyatt family had a huge impact. It was around the same time, but you just, literally all of those guys got released from the company at some point.
Right.
Like, they all literally got released from the company at some point. So it's, you know, Bray's the only world champion out of that. Like, factions that have that long run, even if you talk about AEW, like, the ones that have had the biggest impact, you know, you talk about, obviously, the Death Riders before that. I mean, I guess before that you had, but Bryan Danielson and when they were
what the hell were
the Combat Club.
Yes, the Blackpool Combat Club. Yeah, that
Blackpool was Combat Club.
Or what about the Pinnacle, like MJF?
Yeah, Pinnacle or JAS, which are kind of, you know, the same thing.
Right, like, you know, at least there you have elite of the elite with MJF, FTR, one of the top tag teams, Wardlow. Maybe one day is the future of a company. Like, maybe. Like, it's just hard to, like, say, like, everyone is a success.
As many factions as AEW has, I don't know if they've really had too many that have had that lasting impact outside of Jericho ones and, like you mentioned, the Pinnacle.
The other WWE one that lasting impact, like, New Day, you got two of three world champs there.
And a King of the Ring.
And a King of the Ring. So, like, there's an impact there, and the fact that you kept them together for so long.
Yeah. Like, I would have to put them on the short list. Like, obviously, they can't get there. But maybe if we're putting together the top five, they sneak into the top five because there's three of them.
Right. Yeah. And then their status in terms of tag team is one of the best ever. I don't think we ever see Woods win a world title. It'd be great, but
no.
I have to rule that one out.
No. I think at this point, like.
Yeah.
If they would have seized some of the momentum that they had when they made him King of the Ring, possibly, but at this point, unfortunately, I can't see it for him at this point.
Yep.
What do we got at number three this week?
This weekend in London, 1 o'clock Eastern on Sunday, it is Forbidden Door from the O2 Arena in London. Which match steals the show at Forbidden Door?
All right, we've got 9 on the card. We have the Lights Out Steel Cage match, which, I guess they've done the lights out in the middle before. Like, I always thought the point of lights out was it has to go on last. They've set the precedent that it doesn't necessarily have to go on last.
That will be a car crash of a match.
Oh, it's going to be outrageous. You have the 3-way tag team elimination match. Hurt Syndicate versus Brodito and FTR. Okada taking on Strickland for the Unified Championship.
Right, which is three titles, of course, because Unified means three.
Yes. Tony Storm versus Athena. You have the Fatal 4-Way match for the TBS Championship featuring Mercedes Moné, Persephone, Alex Windsor, and Bazilla. Kyle Fletcher against Takahashi for the TNT title. Nigel McGuinness getting a shot at the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship against Zack Sabre Jr., which good for Nigel. Hangman Page against MJF. And then the reunited Culp Cage versus Sabian and Killswitch. Little switcheroo last night on Dynamite as we get the wrestler formerly known as Luchasaurus back in the fold as he ends up being an injury replacement. So those are the 9 matches. I still think Tony Storm versus Athena's got them. It probably is the one I'm most excited for.
That is one that if it wasn't Forbidden Door... I don't even know the Forbidden Door aspect. That should main event in pay-per-view. And maybe we get more down the line, and that's when we see them eventually get that spot. They've never gone that route yet. A woman match is not main event in AEW pay-per-view. But that match and Athena's win streak, and they've been hiding her in Honor Club, like, I agree with you. That is the match I'm most looking forward to Saturday afternoon, Sunday.
I feel like she has taken the ball and run with it with the TV time she's gotten, Athena.
Yes.
Like, her – was that on Collision last week? Jumping into the arms of the security. Yeah, it was, because that's when Mina Shirakawa came back and she thought like she had set the trap. And next thing you know, she's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place and ends up jumping into the arms of security, which I thought was a genius move on her part. I feel like she has taken the ball and run with this opportunity that she earned. So I am looking forward to the culmination of that, and hopefully it's not the end of whatever this rivalry between Toni Storm and Athena ends up being. I mean, I feel like we've been Athena fans on this show, you leading the way. Hood has been converted after being the only member of the show who, you know, subscribed to Honor Club and seeing the work she's been doing in ROH. So that's the one I think I'm looking forward to the most.
There's no sleepers on this card. Like, there's nothing where you're like, oh, I could skip that one. Like, it is an AEW pay-per-view. You sort of worked in some of the New Japan stuff where it's like, all right, yeah, we'll throw a bone here and there. But, like, this is a – I didn't even say the other women's match, the four-way TBS title. I saw Bozilla in Vegas against Megan Bain. She is a massive human being. She, like, looks the part. And that's going to be an impressive match. I think that'll be a fun four-way.
Yeah, 21 years old, by the way, Bozilla is. So
did not know that. That's insane.
Yeah, 21. Wow. 21 years old in the main card of a pay-per-view.
I will say, if you have not seen her.
I think going to be.
If you have not seen her, think Jordan Grace, but bigger. Like, that's her look. That's her physique. Like, it's impressive.
Okay. Honestly, I think the one I'm going to be most disappointed by is the one that's probably going to main event, and that's Hangman versus MJ.
Yeah, it almost feels like that match isn't necessary this weekend.
It's not, and I like the way that it got set up where MJF was trying to set the trap, and then he tricked himself 2 weeks ago on Dynamite where, oh, he's going to use the contract. I kind of like the way that – I mean – I don't know. I'm conflicted on what happened last night on Dynamite, because I like that the heel kind of was able to maneuver his way out of using the contract and, you know, threatening to light to Mark Briscoe on fire. But also with now the stipulation being if Hangman is counted out or disqualified, he can lose the title. I'm fine with the count out thing. But now I just know at some point in this match, we're going to have MJF begging to be hit with a chair and Hangman with that angry look on his face holding on. Like, it's I wish there was better creative. And I think that's the whole, it's going to disrupt what I think otherwise could be a really good match. And because it's going to be the fact that that has the potential to be the worst match in the card, and it's probably going to be the main event.
Yeah, I agree. I think the one thing the change of stipulation does with last night with MJF still having the other contract is Hangman can retain and then we can still get to MJF being the next champion, because that's all that telegraphed to me. Like, okay, we're going to see it again.
Which is fine. I'm just talking about telegraphing this specific match, which Hangman should win. You need to establish him, and especially if MJF is the one to go over, you want to establish Hangman as a strong champ before you give it back to MJF. But I just feel like the things that were tagged onto it in terms of the stipulation kind of just telegraphed the big moments of the match a little too much. And maybe it's for you. It's just not for me. I don't need to see Hangman holding onto a chair or a steel pipe or whatever it happens to be with that angry look on his face before having the realization of, oh, this is a trap. And
the route I would have gone is like Hangman said, like, oh, you're not going to sign the contract. You're keeping yours. Fine. I'm defending against someone else. And then that's in the way you work in a New Japan talent. Like, hell, why wouldn't we do a Hangman versus Zack Sabre Jr.? Like a champion versus champion, no titles on the line. That doesn't have to be a main event. You get a banger of a match. And then we're still down the line getting MJF and Hangman.
Yeah, and I think part of that was, I think I saw from an interview Tony Khan was doing promoting the event, that it just, with the timing of when this event ended up being and G1 going on, they weren't able to use as much Stardom or New Japan Pro Wrestling talent as maybe they wanted, which Tony said, hey, it's fine. We're still really good partners. It's just the timing just didn't work out this year. But it's just, I wish I had more juice for that match. Because I feel like last night, although I'll tell you what, the triple threat match, with the Hurt Syndicate, Brodino, and FTR. Like, I literally went into last night going, no idea who's going to win this. Like, feel like FTR should, but I really want Brodino too. And then they do the time limit draw and okay, all three. All right, put all six in the ring, I guess. Take my money.
I am 100% on board with Brodino winning the title Sunday. Like, there's been too much of Brody King not winning in these matches, getting this chance to shine. Like, give them a run as tag team champs.
Yeah. Plus, we know that we're going to have another Cope and Cage match. They're going to eventually take on FTR. Like, I guess unless that ends up being for the titles, which as much as I'm as excited as I am that Cope and Cage are reunited, and I enjoy the way that they've done it, and especially him just being like, hey, some people are assholes. This is my asshole. Like, I love that. Like, that was great last night. I don't know if I need to see them as tag champs again, even though it kind of feels like we might.
Like, they're going to be in Toronto. They're going to get the pop. They're going to get the moment. Like,
Like, again, they're so big, you don't need them to be champs. You know, like, just for the same reason, like, you didn't need another, you know, an Adam Copeland run as AEW world champ. Like, he's getting the pop. He's getting the reaction. You can tell other unique stories without him being world champ. You don't need those two to be tag champs.
The other match that, like, I don't know if I'm setting the bar too high, but, like, Okada and Swerve, depending how long they go, like, that's something that should steal a show.
Depends upon what Okada we get, I guess.
But we've seen with the right people, he gets that next level. Like, I'm blanking on what the last card was, but we saw him in a big match. Like, oh, yeah, that's what we're supposed to see. It was him and Kenny. That's right. Like, oh, there he is.
Yeah, him and Kenny. Yeah. Well, because, again, so much of this Okada run in AEW has been pretty good character work, you know, having fun, and you just see him get in the ring and like, oh, okay, he's lost a step, which is fine. It happens. It happens to everybody. But when, like you said, when he gets the right partner and he gets that next gear, it just reminds you how special he can be. And Swerve seems like he should be that partner for just about everybody.
It's crazy how that works.
Like, again, he's one of those guys. Him, Kyle Fletcher, Kenny, you know, guys like that. Obviously, Will Ospreay, you know, I didn't want to go without mentioning him. Like, these are the guys that are always going to bring the best out of everybody. And I think Swerve has that ability to
that feels
Okada.
Opening match. Did those two kick the day off?
I mean, again, maybe it's because I'm a stickler. Like, you either have to start or end with the lights out steel cage match. Like, the lights are out to start or the lights got to be out to end. Like, to me, that's it's going to end up being in the middle of the card, which doesn't make sense.
I don't know. I guess I wouldn't rule out that closing it.
Again, it should close because, again, the whole theory behind lights out is, hey, lights are out. The event's over. If you want to stick around for this, like, it's not on us. That's supposed to be, like, the whole basis. Like, putting in the middle of the card. Like, yeah, it's pro wrestling, right? You're supposed to suspend your – I can't suspend my belief of, oh, you're good with the four matches before and the four matches after, but, like, this middle one you're just not okay with it somehow.
You put up the copyright at the end, the announcers take off, and it's just like, all right, we have no part of it. No ring introductions. Like, just put them out there. And is this a two-ring setup, or are you getting all these bodies in one ring and one cage?
I think you're I'm assuming it's one cage.
There's a lot of bodies that might not survive this. I don't think we needed Tanahashi on TV last night. Like, I think little of him is possible. Like, I know it's the last run and pay your respects, but talk about losing a step a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Should I be worried about Will Ospreay?
Probably, but I feel like with this many people, you could hide him enough. But he's definitely jumping off the cage.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're getting surgery, man.
Just make sure you got a good receiver on the other end.
I'm just saying, like, you're getting surgery. Like, you don't – I understand you want to go and perform in London, bruv, but
– Yo, too.
I feel like you've already given us enough. Like, if Will Ospreay doesn't wrestle another single match, he has given this business more 100%. Than enough. And don't get me wrong. This is not me saying I hope you're – I want to see him more. And that's why I'm worried about him, because I want him to go get surgery. I want him to be healthy. I want him to come back out. But more importantly, I want him to go get surgery and then just be healthy.
That's the important part, but I wouldn't trust him.
Yeah. Again, it's going to be a banger of a pay-per-view. It's an AEW pay-per-view. I'm not going to miss it. All right, what do we got in news?
All right, how about some WWE streaming news? We heard the news a couple weeks ago, WWE and ESPN partnering up with WWE PLEs moving to the new ESPN app. Well, it's coming your way sooner rather than later. Announced this week, WrestlePalooza, September 20th, also the same day as All Out, will be on the ESPN app, the first WWE PLE to go against an AEW pay-per-view. NXT will stay on Peacock. Saturday night's main event will also become a Peacock exclusive, which will include, on December 13th, John Cena's final match. You got all that?
I do. They're still working out deals with other service providers, like if you're Brian and myself,
right?
YouTube TV, to make this free, right? So if you are a subscriber to certain cable packages, or if you already have, not shockingly, Hulu Live TV, which is already part of Disney, like, this is included as part of that fee. You know, just like if you had the old ESPN app, which the new ESPN app launched today, by the way, if you had the old ESPN app and you had your cable subscription, like, that still got you access to everything that's on ESPN through the app. Similarly, that's what would be here. So if you subscribe to those things, like, you wouldn't have to pay the extra $29.99 a month in order to get the WWE pay-per-views, or PLEs, excuse me. But the interesting part of this to me is, WWE was in such a hurry. It seemed so fitting that we were getting the Saturday Night's main event in December and John Cena was going to get his final match on network television. And it's just a bummer to me that instead now that's going to be on Peacock, because they were in such a rush to get over to ESPN and be a part of that, that they had to now broker a deal with NBC, Universal, and Peacock in order for them to be able to make that jump. Apparently they felt that because they've done two-night WrestleManias and a two-night SummerSlam, that they had already fulfilled that contract. But obviously NBC felt differently. Otherwise, you wouldn't have had to negotiate a deal.
Like, apparently that was
so it's just a bummer to me.
Also, Evolution, like some of these random pay-per-views, all of a sudden, like, hey, we promised you X amount of PLEs. We gave that to you. You just got to count, you know, WrestleMania as two and SummerSlam as two. So here we are.
It's just a bummer to me that we're going from Cena being on network television for that last one. And again, it'd be no different if they decided to do his final match at a PLE, right? So that's the way I'm choosing to look at it. But it's just a bummer because if you were a fan, you're going, oh, John Cena, NBC, not going to miss it. Now when it's behind a paywall on Peacock, it kind of loses, Saturday Night's main event loses some of the luster to me of what it was and feels more.
Yeah, and I think that's 100% fair. I think September 20th will be the interesting one with WrestlePalooza. They said Cena will be main eventing. It's expected to be Brock Lesnar. We're expected to see Cody defend against Drew and all that going against All Out, which will be in Toronto. So the first time head-to-head, main roster versus AEW, which if you're an AEW fan and, you know, if you're Tony Khan, I count that as a win. And as an AEW fan and enjoys that product more, I think it's going to make All Out that much better because they know they have to raise the bar again.
Well, and I'll tell you what, I have no doubt that the All Out pay-per-view in a whole, and certainly the main event, especially if it's Brock versus Cena, main event's going to be a lot better than what 100%. WWE puts out there. Feel very confident.
Yep.
Very.
Cody Rhodes, we had a lot of talk about him in AEW. Well, on his podcast, he said, quote, "It hurts my heart because I'd love to tell the story. I just have to wait for somebody else to tell the story and hopefully include me in it." Talking about his time in AEW.
Well, I guess we don't know if he was specifically talking about his time in AEW. We're kind of drawing, we're connecting the dots ourselves. Cody, if you want to tell the story, tell the story. If you don't, stop alluding to it. Like, I guess that's the point where I'm at here. Right. I wish you would tell the story. I'd love to know as a fan what happened because you were a part of that. And obviously something happened. I'd like to know what it is. But if either tell me or don't. Like, don't do this thing. I hate it when people do this. Oh, I got a great. And I have to bully Chewy on the show I do in ESPN Milwaukee. Oh, I can't tell that one. Well, then what are you opening up your mic and saying that out loud for, man? Like, stop stepping up to interviews or going on your own podcast and saying, oh, I'd love to tell the story, but I can't. All right. Like, I already know that, man. Like, either tell the story or don't. But don't keep teasing it because that's what gets
people
frustrated.
Tony feels like, you know, he's very old school and like the Carney way where I don't know how much I even trust coming out of his mouth half the time when it comes to some of this revisionist history.
Well, and that's what he kind of alluded to in the quote, like, oh, every time I say something, I'm told I'm misremembering it. Like, okay, man. Like,
you could just not talk about it.
Like, I just somebody tell it, and then we can kind of figure out where the truth.
Finally, news and notes: Willow Nightingale tells Sports Illustrated, "quote It's about time for a women's blood and guts match."
They got the women's division to do it.
It feels like they might slowly be going there. Like, I wonder. The fact that we're not getting it in this cage match this weekend, and the women's division with Sky Blues Group, and they're building a lot of stuff there, could it be coming sooner rather than later? And maybe that's why.
I hope so. And maybe that's why she's teasing it. They've got enough women to do it, and you tell a story that makes sense to do it. Yeah, I'm on board.
They're doing a lot of that stuff, like Queen Aminata, Sky Blue. Like, there's a bunch of bodies there. Throw them in a cage, let them have some fun.
Yeah, get two matches out there, throw a cage around, or two rings out there, throw, yeah, sign me up. Sign me up. You know what? Say less. Say less, yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. We're on the same page, Willow. We're on the same page. What did you have for matches?
I just wrote down the word natty. Like, not Natalya Neidhart, but natty. When we see her in the ring, a triple threat match at Triple Mania this weekend, and then Raw versus Becky,
Triple Mania.
Natty delivers when she's in the ring and allowed to just be natty.
God, and she comes out with, entourage around her. Like, she just has an aura about her. Like, unleash that in WWE, man. Like, and hopefully, again, I guess we didn't, because we didn't even really talk about the pregnancy news of Naomi. And now we have, which, by the way, was fantastic. And then, like, her going from, and I'm glad they played the clip of Stephanie's podcast first, because that can be the heartfelt, and Stephanie can give you congratulations, Jim's there. And then she can still be the heel to Adam Pearce in the ring. Like, it was really well done. But now we have a vacant championship. Put that thing
I
on
agree.
That. Not Natalya.
But for some reason, it's one of those Karrion Kross things. Instead, he talks to her. Like, it's like, oh, this is getting over organically, so we can't put it on your television. It's like, no, just give it to us. Like, I don't understand.
Badass Natty? Yeah, sign me up. Say less. And again, like, you, it's almost like this perfect storm, because obviously you had long-term plans for Naomi to be your champ. You had long-term plans. So now that's blown up. Isn't that the time to try something?
Also, I want
to try something new. Give it to her. Let her do that stuff on WWE TV.
In terms of the pregnancy, Kevin Owens tweeted out, "I have high hopes that with Naomi and Gigantic Jim, the nicest bloodline member, despite being so misguided, as his parents, the child will turn out to be a decent human being, unlike his uncles and the children of his various family members, former tag team partners." So high hopes from KO.
All right. So is that a better kayfabe tweet than what Becky Lynch's was, saying that getting pregnant as the champ is irresponsible?
Those are both very good. Strong social media week for the WWE.
If we're talking about pro wrestling and what it means to be a pro wrestler, like, KO and Becky are like on near the top of my list. So that's just two pro wrestlers doing pro wrestling. Not just clapping. I really liked Io Sky versus Raquel Monday Night Raw. Again, I feel like Io's just on a hot streak. Like, you throw her in the ring with just about anyone.
I'm curious to talk about the vacant title. Like, do they just go another Io run, or is Raquel an option? I feel like they're putting her out there a lot.
I don't feel like Raquel's an option, just because I don't want the championship just bogged down with whatever's going on with Judgment
Day.
But
then you have a story once Liv comes. Like, I don't know how close Liv is to coming back, but yeah.
That's kind of the thing. But I don't think, I guess Raquel would have to, like, end up becoming buddy-buddy with
Liv
with
comes
Roxanne.
Back with a giant face in that situation. So.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, again, you could talk me into. But again, any idea you come up with is not going to get me more excited than
I agree.
Badass.
The other match I had, we talked about Little Dynamite last night, FTR and Brodito going the distance. Like, those four, not surprising.
Really good. But I also, from last night, Athena and Monet versus Storm and Alex Windsor was really good. And then even going to Collision, the debut of Ace Austin.
I need to watch
Ricochet
that one.
I'm
excited to see that announced. Ace Austin's one of those guys. I don't know if I've ever seen him in TNA. I just see him in Indies, and every time I'm like, oh, I like this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So you put him in the ring with Ricochet and you end up having a fun match on Saturday night. It was a good time.
All right. Yeah,
so I would recommend that one. Again, we've got Forbidden Door this weekend. I hope everybody kicks back, enjoys that. If you happen to miss from earlier in the episode, go back, either watch this episode or on Friday, we are going to make the Killer Cross interview available as its own video. So check us out on YouTube, comment, subscribe, youtube.com/@goodkarmawrestling to check out all the different interviews, all the different features that we have over there. We'll be back next week. We'll be reacting to Forbidden Door. We'll be getting ready for Clash in Paris on the WWE side. So many wrestling things to do. We're going to talk about them right here on GKW.